Chapter 31. Narada instructs the Prachetas. Text 20. Apahata Sakala Eshana Amala Atmani Avirata Etita Bhavano Pahata Nija Jana Vasha Gatvam Atmano Yan Na Sarati Chidravad Akshara Satam Hi. Apahata sakalaisha namalatmani Abhiratam edita bhavano pahata
Abhiratam edita bhavano pahata
Nija jana vasha gatvam atmanoyam Nasarati chidravad akshara satam hi Apahata sakalai shana malatmane
Apahata sakalai shana malatmane
Aviratam edita bhavano pahuta
Aviratam edita bhavano pahuta
Nija jana vasha gatvam atmano yan
Nija jana vasha gatvam atmano yan
Nasarati chidravad akshara satam hi
Nasarati chidravad akshara satam hi
Apahata sakalaisha Apahata
Vanquished
Sakala Eshana
desires.
Amala spotless. Atmani
to the mind.
Abhiratam constantly. Edhita
increasing.
Bhavana with feeling. Ukahuta being called. Nija jana
of his devotees.
Vasha under the control. Gatvam
going.
Atmana
his.
Ayan
knowing.
Na never. Sarati
goes away.
Chidravat
like the sky.
Akshara
the
Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Satam
of the devotee. He certainly. Translation. Being completely cleansed of all material desires, the devotees are freed from all mental contamination. Thus, they can always think of the Lord constantly and address Him very feelingly. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, knowing Himself to be controlled by His devotees, does not leave them for a second, just as the sky overhead never becomes invisible. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is clear from the previous verse that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Janardhan, is very quickly satisfied by the activities of his devotees. The pure devotee is always absorbed in the thoughts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated, Srinvatam Swakata Krishna. By always thinking of Krishna, the pure devotee's heart is freed from all kinds of desires. In the material world, the heart of the living entity is filled with material desires. When the living entity is cleansed, he does not think of anything material. As the mind is completely cleansed, one attains the perfectional stage of mystic yoga. For then the yogi always sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart. Dhyana vastita tadgatena manasa pasyanti yam yogina. As soon as the Lord is seated within the heart of the devotee cannot be contaminated by the material modes of nature. As long as one is under the control of the material modes, he desires so many things and makes so many plans for material sense enjoyment. But as soon as the Lord is perceived in the heart, all material desires vanish. When the mind is completely free from material desires, the devotee can think of the Lord constantly. In this way, he becomes completely dependent upon the lotus feet of the Lord. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prays, I nanda tanuja kinkaram padita mam vishame bhavam buddha kripaya tava pada pankaja stita duli sadrisham vichintaya. My dear Lord, I am your eternal servant, but somehow or other I have fallen into this ocean, into the ocean of this material world. Kindly pick me up and fix me as a speck of dust at your lotus feet. Shikshastaka, verse 5. Similarly, Srila Narottam Das Thakur prays, Ha Prabhu Nanda Suta Rishabhanu Suta Duta Karuna Karaha E Bara Narottama Dasa Kaya Nate Liha Rangapaya Tuma vine ke ache amara. My dear Lord, you are now present with the daughter of King Vrishabhanu, Srimati Radharani. Now both of you please be merciful upon me. Don't kick me away, because I have no shelter other than you. In this way the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes dependent on his devotee. The Lord is invincible, yet he is conquered by his pure devotee. He enjoys being dependent on his devotee, just as Krishna enjoyed being dependent on the mercy of Mother Yashoda. Thinking himself dependent on the devotee gives the Supreme Lord great enjoyment. Sometimes a king may engage a joker, and in the process of joking, the king is sometimes insulted. The king, however, enjoys these activities. Everyone worships the Supreme Lord with great reverence. Therefore, the Lord sometimes wants to enjoy the chastisement of his devotee. In this way, the relationship eternally existing between the Lord and his devotee is fixed, just like the sky overhead. Apaha sakalai shana malatmani aviratam edita bhavano pahuta Nija jana vasha gatvam atmano yam nasarati chidravad aksharasatam hi. Being completely cleansed of all material desires, the devotees are freed from all mental contamination. Thus they can always think of the Lord constantly and address him very feelingly. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, knowing himself to be controlled by his devotees, does not leave them for a second, just as the sky overhead never becomes invisible. Om Gyanatam Randasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuramanatam Yenatasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupaka Dharmayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vanchakalpata Rubhya Sakripa Sindhubhya Vacha Paridhanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is a very nice series of verses, actually. which we have just read, in fact, in Linasia. Very nice series of verses spoken by Srila Narayana Muni about the intimate relationship between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his pure devotees. That's a very intimate relationship. And it's very hard, impossible practically, for the ordinary person to understand that. Even though, of course, in many ways it resembles the relationships that the Lord has with his pure devotees may resemble material relationships. Or actually the fact is that the material relationships resemble those relationships. This is the actual perspective. Yes. Even though that is the case, but still, the transcendental aspect which is there is so deep and so profound that very quickly, practically immediately, the relationships of the Lord with his pure devotees go beyond the capacity of the fallen conditioned souls to understand. Just in certain aspects, they may be able to get some idea, but otherwise, this is very, very deep and very transcendental that the Supreme Person, who no one is equal to, he's called Asamurdva. Asamurdva means no one is equal to him, no one is greater than him. That is one definition given of the Supreme Personality of God. So, even though he's so great, he's unlimited. He is so great we cannot practically begin to conceive. Compared to some great materialistic person, very powerful, very influential, very famous, the Supreme Personality of Godhead's greatness is inconceivably greater. Such an extraordinary person. But still he chooses to have intimate relationships with his devotees in different ways. And even here, this verse and this series of verses is saying that Lord Krishna, even though he is so great, he becomes so intimately related with his devotees in their loving exchanges that he becomes dependent on his devotees. And sometimes, as Srila Prabhupada mentioned here, he even becomes apparently mistreated by his devotees. At least if we consider his greatness. The Mother Yashoda to wag her finger at him and chastise him. You're a naughty boy. You must not do that. How dare you do that? And Krishna is up to some mischief. Considering his position as the absolute Supreme Personality of Godhead, and what right has she got to do that? How could she do that? Surely it would be wrong to do that. And very insulting, actually, to such a great person. But Lord Krishna relishes that. Srila Prabhupada gives a little hint here that sometimes, just so we can get a little idea, sometimes a king, big, powerful person, in order to just add a lighter note to the situation in general, in the palace and in his administration, he will employ a comedian, a joker, the court jester, and sometimes that jester, of course, he knows that his business is to amuse the king, to lighten the atmosphere sometimes. So sometimes, as Srila Prabhupada points out, sometimes he does that by actually making fun of the king, mocking the king. But the king enjoys that, because that is the nature. They have that special relationship that is clearly understood. Otherwise, if some ordinary person came up to him and said that, then he might be in trouble. He might get into trouble for doing that. There was one famous minister of, I think, Akbar, if I remember correctly. His name was Birbal. And there are many stories about Birbal. He was a minister, but he was also a comedian at the same time. And there are many stories. There are actually collections. There's like books of stories of different incidents where Birbal you know, it makes, does something funny. And there's one famous one. When the king got a little, Akbar, he was the emperor actually, got a little irritated with Birbal, and he said, "What is the difference between you and an ass, a donkey?" So Birbal, he approached the king, and he put his hand out like this to touch the king, and then he did like this to himself, and then he said, "About that much." A very good one I just heard the other day, you may have heard it. They did a drama about it in Indonesia recently, that Akbar, oh no, the queen, Akbar's queen, who wasn't quite as sort of flexible and generous in her sense of humor as Akbar, got irritated with with Birbal. Got irritated with Birbal for kind of mocking her husband in public sometimes, or in sort of semi-public situations. So she asked her husband one day, "Will you do something for me?" Oh no, she was sulking. And Akbar came and said, "What's wrong? Please tell me." She wouldn't say. "Tell me, please." She wouldn't say. "Please, you must tell me. So I'll do it. Whatever you like. Just tell me what has happened and we'll rectify the situation." Nothing. Then he said, "I'll do anything." She said, "No, you won't. You won't do anything." He said, "Yes, I'll definitely do anything. Just tell me. I'll definitely do whatever you like." "All right. Then banish Birbal. Make my brother your minister." The brother was a bit of a fool. Not really qualified. So Akbar, he thought, "Well, I can't do that. How can I banish Birbal? He's so valuable. And her brother is just, you know, not up to this type of job." So he's trying to get out of it. But the wife says, "See, I told you. You wouldn't do whatever I say. So just go away." So then he said, "All right, I'll do it. But how to do it? We have to think up a way to do it so it seems like it's not unfair." So the queen said, "All right, what we will do is that you go with Birbal to the market and then you tell him that you need me and ask him to come back and fetch me. But I will say I'm busy. I will say I cannot come. He will go back without me. Then you can fire him for failing." This was the plan. So the king, then Akbar, told Birbal one day, "We are going to the market. Please come with me." So Birbal thought, "This is very strange. He never goes to the market. There's something funny here." So they got down to the market. And then Birbal said, "Oh, I need my queen here. We have to make a decision here together. Please go and get her." So Birbal was thinking, "Aha, there's something funny here." So he went back to the queen. And in the meantime, he spoke to one of his friends. They made a plan. What to do if the queen refused. You heard the story? So they got there, and Birbal approached the queen and said, "My dear queen, your husband is in the market, he needs your assistance, and please come." The queen said, "I'm busy, I'm very busy, I can't come, I'm very busy." Birbal said, "No, please, you must come, he really needs your help, please come." "No, no, I'm too busy, just tell him I cannot come, I cannot come, perhaps later, I cannot come now." Then, out of nowhere, the friend came and started whispering, semi-whispering in Birbal's, "Yeah, like biz 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 market, biz biz king, biz biz girlfriend, biz biz, come quickly." When the queen heard that, she said, "What? I'm going to the market immediately." So Birbal went down with the queen. And the king said, "Well, what happened?" She said, but I heard something about girlfriend. So anyway, the Birbal was very clever. And the king, Akbar, tolerated him, even though sometimes he really did some very radical things, actually. Anyway. So Krishna, sometimes the devotees do very radical things. Mother Yashoda sometimes chastises Krishna. And Krishna cries. He actually cries. Because he's feeling so disappointed that my mother feels like this. Oh, this is very bad. Sometimes the gopis, Srimati Radharani, and the gopis, they chastise Krishna. Radharani sends them away. Go away. I don't want to see you. There's one story connected with one place in the Vasana area where Lord Krishna was trying to glorify Srimati Radharani. And he told her, you are so beautiful. Your face is just like the full moon. Radharani thought, oh, that's nice. But it happened to be a full moon night. She looked up and she was saying, oh, that's very nice. She looked up and she noticed there was the full moon. She noticed the full moon, the moon, has spots on it. So thinking, oh, that's very nice, but wait a minute. Then she said, oh, Krishna's saying that I have a spotty face. That's very bad. She got so angry, she told Krishna, just go. Because it's transcendental, it's not exactly like that, but on the surface, like that. And Krishna got so upset that he started crying. And there is, our acharyas explain, a science of crying. If a person cries cold tears, those are tears of ecstasy. And if a person cries hot tears, that means the person is really distressed. So, Krishna was crying. He fell at Radharani's feet, crying and crying. And Radharani felt his tears on her feet. They were hot. This is after some days, actually, after refusing to see Krishna. So when she realized that Krishna was really deeply affected, then again she accepted Krishna. Of course, this is completely transcendental. But sometimes these things happen. But actually Krishna loves that exchange. He enjoys that, relishes that exchange. Much more than when some very respectful, very formal type of devotee offers some prayers in glorification that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are the greatest, and so on and so forth like that. We've all heard of Jatila. Jatila is a very special devotee in that she is always criticizing Krishna. But at the same time, on a deeper level, she has great affection for Krishna, and particularly, she has great affection for Srimati Radharani. So, it's explained, in fact, in Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada explains, that Krishna says that he enjoys far more, the chastisements of Jatila than the Vedic prayers. You would rather hear that chastisement. Because in that chastisement of Jatila, Krishna hears her very deep affection and concern for Srimati Radharani. And he relishes that so much that out of love for Radharani, who he loves, Jatila is speaking like that to him. And he enjoys that far more than some somewhat pompous types of prayers that you find in certain parts of the Vedic literature. So, the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes so attached to these devotees that he will not leave them ever. And they know that. Just like we all know that the sky is never going to go away. There's never any question of having any doubt that when I walk outside today, when I look out the window, will the sky be there or will it have gone? The question never arises. So in a similar way here, Narada Muni is giving this example that the pure devotees, they know, and it is a fact, that Krishna always stays with them. And there's never any question, is he going to be here? Will he have gone? There's never any question. This in fact is implicit in the 8th verse of Shikshastakam. Aslishava para ratam kanastumam adarshanam mama hatam karotuma. That whether adarshanam, whether you are not present before me, whether you crush me in your embrace, you're so close to me, that you crush me in your embrace, you're always my worshipful Lord. Because even, the devotee knows, even though Krishna may apparently not be present, but Krishna's there. Krishna's there. He's always there. Just like if somehow we cannot see the sky due to circumstances, someone closes the curtains, or we're inside some building, we cannot see. Or there's so many clouds, we cannot see. But we all know. The sky is there. The sky has not left us. So it becomes like that. In Nectar of Devotion, there's a very nice description of the consciousness of the devotee on the level of Krishna Prema, pure love for Krishna. First of all, it's explained that for the practicing devotee is a person who has come from material existence. And in material existence, everyone is thinking, and that practicing devotee was thinking when he or she was in that material situation, that I am my own person. I can do as I like. My life is for me to do it as I choose. So, however, when that person takes up devotional service and they become a sadhaka, a practicing devotee, then the devotee is meant to very clearly understand that I am Krishna's. I am Krishna's. I am not mine. Neither am I my parents. Neither am I my country's. Neither am I my communities, or families, or this, or that, or friends. And I'm not even mine. I am Krishna. So when the devotee, the sadhaka, practicing devotee, is fixed up in this idea, then the devotee can become steady in Krishna consciousness. If the devotee becomes fixed in that conception, that I am Krishna, and that is all, then on the basis of that fundamental understanding of one's position, then one's whole life can develop as a Krishna conscious life. However, in Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada explains that on the level of Krishna Prema, the pure devotee, very exalted devotee, has gone beyond just having to remind himself or herself, oh yes, I'm Krishna, so I better not do this. Some independent activity. The devotee does not need to remind himself of that. Rather, the devotee on the level of Krishna Prema is thinking another thing of that sort. The devotee is thinking, Krishna is mine. Krishna is mine. So we might think, that is a fact. Because as Narada Muni is saying here, Krishna, the relationship develops like that. And it becomes like that. We see, for example, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's the story of Bilba Mangal Thakura. And he eventually, it's a long story, but he comes to Vrindavan eventually and stays there for the rest of his life. However,
On the way, there was one incident and he was blinded. Actually, his eyes were physically removed and thrown away. Yeah. So he arrived in Vrindavan with no eyes. And somehow or other he was feeling his way around. So he came to Govardhan Hill. Anyway, he came somewhere there. And he was sitting there and chanting. And Krishna came, little cowherd boy came, actually it was Krishna, and offered some milk. Here, please take some milk. So he took that milk, he drank that milk, found it was very nice. Later, or perhaps that night, he had some dream that this little cowherd boy appeared in his dream and revealed that he's actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, the boy, Krishna, had said when he brought the milk that he would come back later and pick up that container. So, he came back the next morning, and Vilvamangal Thakur, blind, but he was waiting that when this boy comes, when Krishna comes, I will grab him, I will embrace him like this. So, Krishna came and said, good morning, here I am, I've come to pick up the pot. So now I'll take it. And he picked up the pot and Vilva Mangal lunged forward to grab him and embrace him, but he missed. Krishna was too quick and jumped back and laughed. So Vilva Mangal told him that you may be able to escape from my hands, but you can never escape from my heart. He told him that. This is the situation. This is the consciousness. Krishna is mine. And Krishna is that devotee. So when the devotee says like that, or does something in that mood, like Mother Yashoda, she chastises Krishna. Some children, they would think, I don't want to be chastised like that, I'm going to run away from home. But Mother Yashoda doesn't think like that. She thinks, Krishna's mine, my son, I must chastise him. And Krishna relishes that. Yes. So, of course, that is not easy. Srila Prabhupada explains here in the purport very nicely that this is a very exalted level. Of course, Prabhupada says it can be achieved. He says that Krishna is very quickly satisfied by the activities of the devotees. So it can be achieved. But it's achieved when the heart is purified. Prabhupada explains here that when the heart is purified, Krishna comes and he sits there and he remains there permanently. And the devotee always sees Krishna. Premanjana Charita Bhakti Valochanena Santa Sadaiva Hridayeshu Valokayanti. Lord Brahma explains in Brahma Samhita that the pure devotees are always seeing within their heart of hearts Shyam Sundar Krishna. He's always there. Because their eyes have been, and their heart has been anointed with the ointment of love, pure love of Krishna. So, of course we know the Lord is already within the heart. Supersoul is already there. But here we're talking about Krishna himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not just the Supersoul. That Krishna himself takes over. He enters the heart and sits in the heart and takes over from the Supersoul and guides the devotee and helps the devotee and reveals himself to the devotee, and then the devotee is always relating with Krishna, and Krishna never leaves that pure devotee. So of course, while we're still under the influence of the modes, that will not happen. So we should all know that our business is, we must constantly, very seriously, practice the process of devotional service to get out of this maya that we're in. To stop desiring so many material things and like this. Continue on steadfastly in devotional service. And then gradually, as one becomes more attached to the Lord, more dedicated to the Lord, more sold out to the Lord, more willing to do whatever the Lord wants under any circumstance. In other words, as one becomes more advanced in devotional service, then gradually Krishna reveals. And when he does reveal himself, he's there always just like the sky is there. The devotee is never separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada here quotes some very nice verses which are available, readily available to us. So we can also practice chanting these verses. Shikshastakam 5, Ainanda Tanaja Kinkaram. Somehow I fell into this material world, just look at me. But now I'm trying to come back to your lotus feet, so please give me a place at your lotus feet. Ha Prabhu Nanda Sutta, Narottam Das Thakura. Vrishabhanu Sutta Duta. My dear Lord, you're present here with Srimati Radharani. So please, both of you be merciful. Don't kick me away. I have no shelter other than you. So the more we develop this consciousness of having no interest, no shelter other than the lotus feet of Krishna, the more Krishna will reveal himself to us. Until finally, the relationship becomes so tight, so close, that he becomes inseparable from his pure devotee. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
No matter how nice they are, how well managed or whatever. You see, these are very stunning. Very amazing. So Lakshman gave beautiful description of her feet, the lotus feet. And Hanuman, it was such a description, he was captivated, completely amazed. And he remembered that. And when he jumped over to Lanka and went to that Ashok Grove, then he found Sita. And there were different ways, different sort of like tests he used to identify her. One was the ring. That's generally the one that most people know about. The ring. The famous ring. But another was her feet. And he looked and he saw, he examined her feet, yes, this is Sita. She has those feet. Yeah. So, very nice. So, Lakshman was married, but when Ram went into exile, he went with Ram, then his wife faithfully remained at home, and they were reunited later. And while he was there, he maintained strict, absolute strict celibacy. So in that sense, he can be considered to have maintained a standard or a type of vow of brahmacharya. There are generally four types of brahmacharyas, Prabhupada describes. One takes a vow of celibacy for 1 year. So as a specific preparation for becoming married. Another at the other end of the scale takes an absolute vow of lifetime celibacy. They're called Naishtiki Brahmachari. And then there are other types of brahmacharis who take vows of celibacy for different periods of time or under different circumstances. So Lakshman, he maintained that standard of brahmacharya. Strict celibacy until he returned to Ayodhya. In Krishna consciousness, is a lady or man who is divorced or widowed allowed to remarry? Well, generally, actually we just had a wedding this morning and I was sort of participating on the side, and I did note that the priest part of the vows they took were to not be separated.
Yeah.
This is generally the standard, that the vow is taken, that commitment is taken. It's not just like one of these, like a lease that you take out, you know, for a six-month lease, or like a monthly lease, you can just drop it any time if you want, or they can drop you any time if they want. It's not even a five-year contract. In America, they're considering making different types of marriage contracts now.
Yeah.
And one of the options that they're seriously considering is a five-year renewable. So it's meant to be like that. Now, you might think, well, that's not fair, because what happens if you find out later that the person wasn't like what you thought they were like? And now you've got problems. Well, the point is, you need to have that figured out before you make that commitment. You see? Yeah. Yes. So, of course, sometimes it happens also that a person who is nice at one point, even we could say a nice devotee at one point, but sometimes it happens that a nice devotee somehow or other becomes, their consciousness becomes severely contaminated. We are minute spirit souls. We have minute independence. And there is a possibility we may sometimes get swept away from a particular position that we may have adopted if we're not careful. If we're careful, then we will not be swept away by anything, actually. But if we're not careful, and it can happen even to someone who's basically a nice devotee, they may get swept away and change. So therefore, sometimes it happens that even in a Krishna-conscious marriage, where all reasonable care has been taken beforehand to make sure that compatibility is there as far as possible, despite all the best efforts, sometimes something goes severely wrong, very seriously wrong. So our standard is in Krishna consciousness that only if there's such a situation where something goes very severely wrong could such a thing as divorce be allowed. Otherwise, you know, the thing is, when people get married, I mean, I've never been married in this lifetime, so, and some of you are, and you could say better than me, but what I've picked up is that at the time of marriage or thereabouts, the tendency is to have a very sort of glowing impression of your partner. Am I right? But time is a very powerful thing, very revealing thing. Often it's said in the Vedas, if you want to understand something, just give a little time, and time will tell you. So in the beginning, there may be some tendency to be infatuated, and a little carried away, like that. But then in due course of time, you find out that this person I married is no better than me. And I have problems. Yes, which I struggle to deal with sometimes. And this person also has problems which he or she struggles to deal with sometimes, and they kind of spill out on me and become my problems. Am I right? Would you say I'm right? Or would you rather not say? That's a political answer. No comment. But we believe that this is the case. We believe that the glitter wears off after a little while. Yeah. So the thing is that just because a marriage may not be as wonderful as you expected it, and that sometimes there may be even genuine problems, which takes some real thought to deal with. But unless there's very serious problem, then one should tolerate. This is the material world, and we have to learn. One of the main things we have to learn is to be tolerant and to push on with our Krishna consciousness. Don't expect perfection so easily within the material world. If a person is widowed, if their husband or wife dies prematurely, then in Krishna consciousness we don't have a serious problem with them remarrying, as long as they do that in an intelligent Krishna conscious way. Lord Ram, together with his brothers, went hunting with bow and arrow. What did he do with those dead animals? Are you suggesting that he might have eaten them? No. He wouldn't do something like that. Sometimes in the Vedic days, the warriors, the Kshatriyas, would fight animals. Sometimes they literally fight them hand to hand. To keep in condition for when the next war comes, because it may just come, and if you're not ready for it, then you may get into big trouble. So they would fight with animals, and not like, you know, little harmless monkeys or little, you know, something like that. But I mean like tigers or elephants, you know, real serious combat. So it wasn't like a recreational kind of sport like that. Do we come back after going back home, back to Godhead? Why? Do you want to come back? Would you like to go and check it out and then keep the return portion of your ticket just in case you prefer it in Chatsworth or Phoenix? Well, generally not. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that Janma Karma Shremadivya Devam Yoga Kapada Chakradayam Rajana Naiti Mahameti Sarka Punar Janma Na, Krishna says. That one who has understood the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities, Punar Janma Na. Punai means again, Janma means birth, not. They don't take the birth again within this material world. That is the general principle. That is the general principle. Prabhupada explained that when you go back to Godhead, when you go back to Godhead, then you will be able to remember what it was like. So many lifetimes. What difficulty I went through. If you think it's hard living in the New South Africa, you should imagine what it's like being an animal. Like a cow or a sheep. You never see old cows, right? Because they aren't any. They all get killed, every single last one of them. Not one enters old age. Not one reaches old age, because they're killed. And the conditions under which they live before they're killed generally are very unpleasant. If you go to one of these feeding lots, there's no grass, it's just dirt, and a whole lot of these animals, and they're just being fed like all these grains to fatten them or something like that. What a way to live. Yeah, it's very horrible. So, when you go back to Godhead, you can remember. Prabhupada, sometimes people wonder that if I have lived in previous lives, why can I not remember now? Srila Prabhupada once said that it is Krishna's mercy you cannot remember. Because if you could remember, it would be too shocking. You'd become traumatized. Just like a person, sometimes it happens, people see, they get exposed to some shocking situation, some bizarre car accident, pieces of human body all over the place. Maybe someone they knew. Some of the devotees were telling me, in fact I think it's in one of the books of remembrances about Prabhupada, that they were driving with Prabhupada in India, and they came upon the scene of an accident, but not your ordinary accident. What had happened was, one young man in his mid or late 20s had been hit by a truck, face on, and knocked over backwards, and the truck carried on straight over the top of him, but only over one side of him. So half of his body, from his foot down to the top of his head, half of his body had merged into the road. And the other half was recognizable. You know, it was still sticking up there. And the devotees were just horrified. They couldn't believe it. Prabhupada was sitting in the car. He just chanted Hare Krishna. And the wife was there. And she'd lost control altogether. Was totally berserk. So, or if you're in a war, and you know, you see people getting blown to pieces and all that sort of thing, then people become traumatized. It severely affects them. So Prabhupada said that it is actually Krishna's mercy that we cannot remember all these things, because we might not be able to manage it. But when you become completely purified, and your consciousness is completely liberated, then basically you can deal with anything. So Prabhupada said in one letter that when you go back to Godhead, you can remember all your lifetimes. And then you look at your situation, there you are in Goloka Vrindavan with Krishna, and then you think about how you were some poor animal and you got slaughtered or abused horribly, and then there's no question of going back. Of course, if you really insist, if you're one of these diehards, you know, every now and then you find one of these diehards who must go down with the ship, even if he can easily escape. But just for the sake of honor or something, he just has to do it. So if you really insist, then you can come back, even from Goloka Vrindavan, if you really insist. But the likelihood of that happening, Srila Prabhupada said, is so remote, is not one in a million. It's not one in a billion. It is one in so small, one in so large a number that you cannot calculate it actually. It's more or less one in infinity. And what is the chance of one in an infinity? It's zero. There is no chance. So therefore Krishna says that when you go back, you don't return. Yeah. Because the chance is just one in infinity that you might. But if you insist, you can. Krishna won't stop you. Prabhupada said once that before the living entity falls down from the kingdom of God into material life, Krishna personally comes and sits with you and tries to reason with you. Please don't do this. Please don't do this. And some, they turn back at that point, and they don't fall down. But us, sorry folks, we didn't make it. We are quite a collection of persons, you know, if you really consider. We've all been Lord Brahma. We've all been Lord Indra. Yeah, and we've been the Indra Gopa Germ. Species number one is Lord Brahma. species number 8,400,000 is called the Indradosa germ, a unicellular entity that is the lotus. And we have been through all of them. Try to find where is happiness. Can I find it here? No, I didn't find it here. Let me try in another body then. Didn't find it there. Oh, I'll try another body. 8,400,000 species are like. Probably we've been through all of them even a number of times. And we ended up in Chatsworth. Or even Peter Mertzberg. Not really happy. But you take to Krishna consciousness, you'll become very happy. Even if you are an Indradosa germ. Even if you're in a very low species, you can be very happy. This is why Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I'd rather be an ant, fairly well down. I'd rather be an ant in the house of a devotee than to be a Lord Brahma, species one, but not be a devotee. Because if you consider, if you're an ant living in the house of a devotee, then you'll hear kirtan, you'll get the association of the devotees, you'll hear the scriptures, you'll get prasad, a few crumbs of prasad will keep you going every day. Great! And as we say, someday when there's a big kirtan going on in the house, you may be crawling across the floor and some devotee will dance on you with their lotus foot and you leave your body, your Indradosa germ or ant body, in the middle of the kirtan under the lotus foot of a devotee. What a way to go. We could be so. We should be so fortunate. We have to go sometime under some circumstances. So why not that? Oh, better than being Lord Brahma, who's not a devotee. You can't even compare. Right. Why is Lord Chaitanya not so popular? Or why is there not so much knowledge of him amongst the Hindus? See, I have one of our ant friends. You remember I was mentioning the ants earlier? So I have one here. He's trying to sort of walk through my clothes. And he was climbing up me. But he doesn't know I'm in questions and answers to MP. And we're talking about Lord Chaitanya. He doesn't know. He's just wondering, what is this thing getting in my way? That's all. Yeah, so the demigods, they're so much greater than us. We don't know what they're doing. But they're doing so many things which are affecting us. And we think, oh, it's just nature. Like the weather has been exceptionally good. Almost a little too warm. And people think, oh, it's just the high pressure and the low pressure and the, you know, whatever it is, the air moving in this way and that. And, isn't it? It's the weatherman.